You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and RadioCafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. So this is our Valentine's show. This is posting on the 14th of February, and I thought, what would be a good thing to do on Valentine's Day? So I wrote to a bunch of local poets, and the ones who answered came in and recorded some poetry and a little bit of conversation. So in the show you are about to hear, we'll be listening to Santa Fe poets Donald Levering, Arthur Z, Carol Moldau, Israel Aros, Miriam Sagan, and Malena Merling. And for those of you who are not in the mood for romance, don't worry, the poetry that we're talking about and listening to covers all kinds of ground, and we are defining love very broadly today. So all of that after this announcement. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation supports education along the cradle to career spectrum by investing in Northern New Mexico school districts, nonprofit education programs, and community projects. Education and community grants of up to $2,500 are available to qualified education programs that serve the counties of Los Alamos, Mora, Rio Arriba, San Miguel, Sandoval, Santa Fe, or Taos. 2019 grant application deadlines are February 15th and August 15th. For more information or to apply, visit lanlfoundation.org/grants. That's lanlfoundation.org/grants. I'm very happy now to welcome Donald Levering. He is an award-winning poet, and we are here to read Valentine's Day poetry. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, are love poems a big part of your, like, poetic output?
I guess not, to be truthful. Not a lot, but the ones that are there are from the heart, and I try to take, you know, kind of different approaches so that they're interesting as well as heartfelt.
Would you like to read a poem or two?
Sure. This is from a book called Whose Body? And the poem is called Two People Touch. Two people touch each other's fears, ravens on a street lamp sharing some glistening thing. Is it foil that will tear them up inside, or is it some nourishing thing, something they can take deep within, fuel for the great breast muscles of flight, something that feeds the blast furnaces of their passion, something they may be afraid to name, though they could call it love, could call it staving off the darkness, could keep them in the moment from the cold. Two people touch, something glistening between them, something aflame.
Very cool. Would you like to read another one?
Sure. Let's see. Yeah, I'll read one about that stage of love affairs when you're just giddy. You know, it's the sort of the opening phase of the love affair, and you realize that both of you are just crazy about each other, and sometimes you're not really socially appropriate in that situation because you're so fixated on your love. This is called Look at the Lovers. Look at the lovers running through the airport, giggling all the way, a flag of underwear waving from their suitcase. It's clear that they've lingered in bed. Apparent, they give not a fig that children are staring as they kiss in the queue. Can you remember when you were as happy as finches? Do you blush rereading love letters? Now they have brushed past customs. Now their passports are Valentines. Now they are rushing down the runway, leaping from their shadow, flying.
There's a bird theme.
There is a bird theme, yes. Yep. Happy as finches.
In the previous poem as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Are birds something that you... creatures that you observe?
I do a lot, yeah. And especially ravens. I've got lots of raven poems. But this is the only one that uses them in a love poem.
Right, right. Do you have some more? Would you like to do another? Or?
Sure, sure.
Okay.
Let's see. So this one's about that sort of unrequited love.
We all know that one.
Yes, we all know that one. Okay. Veiled love. Could my passion be hidden from her among the facets of autumn aspen leaves? A love so vast and flaming she cannot grasp it? Perhaps my love is dispersed among purple cirrus at sunset. Maybe it's lost between stars. She comes to me with outstretched arms in the dream, where starlings gather in swirling gusts and are gone at dusk. In the wing beats of a pair of cranes, is that her I hear whispering to another? There's birds again, right?
There's birds again.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question while you're looking for the next one.
Mm-hmm.
I went to your website, which is donaldlovering.com.
Mm-hmm.
So people can go there and check it out if they like. And there's a line on the front of your page that says, in poetry as in yoga, a maximum stretch in one dimension is enabled by doing its opposite. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could talk about that. You're a poet and a yoga practitioner, right?
Yes, I am a practitioner. Yeah, it's just something that I've learned in poetry and in yoga, that exerting oneself, pushing in one direction, it actually frees up space for you to move the other way. And so it's sort of counterintuitive. You know, you would think, well, if you want to go to the right, just lean to the right. But no, you go to the left and see what's over there, and that frees you to go to the right.
Very interesting. And how does that translate into the art?
I think that, for example, you write, as I do, most of my poems are in free verse. But if I write some poems that are really tight, maybe a sonnet, or one of the poems I may read later is a guzzle, which has a specific form, it actually frees me up to write in free verse.
Ah, interesting. Yeah. So the highly structured allows for the free later
yes.
on.
Yes, yes.
Okay, let's hear another poem.
Okay. So this one's called On the Back Road to Your Place. And people have different interpretations. My publisher has a different interpretation from what I interpreted about the last line. So it's called, and on the back road to your place, cars kicked up dirt in my face. I was mistaken for homeless with my ragged backpack. I was mistaken for heartless with my understatement. I was mistaken before I found the back road, the unpaved, hesitating way to your place. Before I found the right route, one woman teased me, another kept forgetting my name. On other roads, I kept making roundabouts, I kept to myself, I kept turning back toward my old nest. On the back road to your place, I coughed from dust of a housewife shaking rugs. I crossed a cat in heat. I was cursed by a raven overhead. I was trailed by feral dogs. I was mistaken for my fears. On the back road, divorce, imperfect children, imperfect husbands and wives. On the back road, meandering detours, ruts of regrets. On the back road, I became impatient with the back road. On the back road, I wished for the expressway. On the back road, I finally opened my hands. I leafed out with the cottonwoods that straddle the way to your place. I ran through the culvert where lovers' names are knotted in spray paint. I kept going, I kept going. On the back road, you were on the way to my place.
Okay, so your interpretation of the last line.
Okay, my interpretation is that I met her. She was on her way to my place, and I'm on the way to her place, and we met in the middle somewhere.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah,
what was
and the... other people have said, oh, it's about misconnections.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So in your mind, you met, and in the mind of some readers, you missed each other.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I guess that really kind of shows how much of your own experience you bring to a poem.
Mm-hmm.
If people have had those missed connections, they're going to see it.
Yeah, you see that more. And it's kind of good if to me, it's good if a poem has that space in it. It's kind of like what we were talking about before, stretching in opposite directions. Well, yeah, sometimes things are not what they seem to be, what you think they are. Maybe there was a misconnection there.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
A little more love poems.
Yeah, more. All right. So this is a love poem in the form of sort of an ode to plums, the fruit. Plum couplets. Hanging from black branches like planets of cruelty and love are plums, each a dawn and a dusk. Purple as bruises from falling off the ladder in love, or purple as tongues sore from licking loved ones. Coiled in each fruit is the seed of hundreds of trees to come. In their greenness they are sour as unrequited love, but they ripen to the sweetness of a first kiss. Loosed by the wind, they drop with the sound of a beloved spouse's final heartbeats. They fall off their pits in a succulent rush of the tongue.
Wow. That's the life cycle.
Yeah, the life cycle. So the last one I'll read is in the form of a guzzle, which is a Malaysian or Persian form. It's in couplets and it has a repeated couple of words at the end of each couplet. And this one, like the other one, was about love and also about plums. This is about trees and also addressed to a lover. So it's called Of Trees. Don your squirrel nest bonnet, ivy skirt, beetle jewels. We'll flirt in the swaying shade of trees. Like large lungs, they filter dust from air. Your love is fresh like the breath of trees. Thoughts of you are with me everywhere. Just like cotton fluff from poplars, seeds of trees. Instead of clearing forests, let's all remove our clothes, entwine our limbs, pretend to be a grove of trees. Like love notes, between us are the needs and offerings exchanged among the roots of trees. When frost is finished stripping all their leaves, we'll shuffle through the vivid hues of trees. The beauty in their being reaches deeper than the science or the poetry of trees. Don't talk to me of Buddha or Don Juan. Just dance with me to the breezy grace of trees.
Donald Levering is a poet who lives in Santa Fe. Thank you so much for being with us and happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Same to you.
I'm very happy to welcome Arthur Z. He is a celebrated award-winning poet, lives here in Santa Fe. It's great to have you on for our Valentine's show.
Thank you for inviting me.
So do you write love poems? Is that sort of a big part of what you do or not so much?
I would say it's part of what I do. I mean, I've been a poet writing for over 40 years, and certainly love is one of the fundamental themes. And oftentimes in a longer poem, I might have images or imagery relating to love or romantic love that sort of threads through the poem. And then other times there are specific love poems that I write.
Would you like to read a poem?
Sure. This first poem is called At the Equinox. The tide ebbs and reveals orange and purple sea stars. I have no theory of radiance, but after rain evaporates off pine needles, the needles glisten. In the courtyard, we spot the rising shell of a moon, and at the equinox, bathe in its gleam. Using all the tides of starlight, we find vicissitude is our charm. On the mud flats off Homer, I catch the tremor when waves start to slide back in. And from Roanoke, you carry the leafing jade smoke of willows. Looping out into the world, we thread and return. The lapping waves cover an expanse of mussels clustered on rocks, and giving shape to what is unspoken, for Scythia buds and blooms in our arms.
So lots of different locations that you're taking us to.
Yes. My wife, Carol Moldau, is also a poet.
Who's also going to be reading on this show.
Yes. And we both travel a lot, giving readings. And so I always feel like there's this sense of going out into the world and return, of going out and return, and that kind of looping motion is part of our lives. And a part of the celebration is to be able to have that return.
And that works its way into your work.
Absolutely.
Would you like to read another one?
Sure. I'm going to read this one next. It's called Comet Hyakutake, and it's an invented form of mine where each line picks up a word or word from the previous lines. So the poem makes a kind of circle or loop. Comet Hyakutake. Comet Hyakutake's tail stretches for 360 million miles. In 1996, we saw Hyakutake through binoculars. The ion tail contains the time we saw bats emerge out of a cavern at dusk. In the cavern, we first heard stalactites dripping. First silence, then reverberating sound. Or touch reverberates and makes a blossoming track. A comet's nucleus emits X-rays and leaves tracks. 2,000 miles away, you box up books, and in 2 days will step through the invisible rays of an airport scanner. We write on invisible pages in an invisible book with invisible ink. In nature's book, we read a few pages. In the sky, we read the ion tracks from the orchard. The apple orchard where blossoms unfold, where we unfold. Budding, the child who writes, the puzzle comes to life. Elated, puzzled, shocked, dismayed, confident, loving. Minutes to an hour. A minute, a pinhole lens through which light passes. Comet Hyakutake will not pass Earth for another 100,000 years. No matter, ardor is here. And to the writer of fragments, each fragment is a whole.
I have to ask you, I don't know if you're allowed to ask poets about this, but...
Sure.
Like, what do you mean by the invisible book and the invisible ink? Does that refer to something?
I think of the white page as kind of like a canvas, a blank canvas, or emptiness, or nothingness. So one of the things I'm thinking about is persistence of emotion, how emotion tends to be transient, or lives are transient, and then how is it for something to sort of endure? In some ways, I thought that maybe there's a kind of mystery, obviously, with this idea that there can be an invisible book to life, and you have invisible pages, and you're writing on invisible ink, and what does that mean? One line says, in nature's book, we read a few pages. So there's the idea that people, humans, can only read or glimpse a small part of the entirety of nature, to the mystery of nature. And then to expand that, to make it sort of cosmological or mysterious, it's like, well, what if you're writing and the words, you can't even see the words, they're invisible. But that doesn't mean they don't exist. They can be there, but you might not be able to see them. And so it's just trying to expand the dimensions of feeling.
Very interesting. Let's hear another one.
White Sands. Walking along a ridge of white sand, it's cooler below the surface. We stop and gazing at an expanse of dunes to the west. Watch a yellow yoke of sun drop to the mountains. An hour earlier, we rolled down a dune. White sand flecked your eyelids and hair. A claret cup cactus blooms, and soap tree yuccas move as a dune moves. So many years later, on a coast, waves rolling to shore, wave after wave, I see how our lives have unfolded, a sheen of wave after whitening wave. And we are stepping barefoot, rolling down a dune, white flecks on our lips, on our eyelids. We are lying in a warm dune as a full moon lifts against an ocean of sky.
Now, you are Chinese American, grew up speaking both Mandarin and English. And as I was listening to your poems just now, I was thinking about some years ago, the Chinese writer An Chi Min, who then moved to America and became American, but she grew up during the Cultural Revolution and wrote a riveting autobiography about that period of her life. When she was here, she was saying about how Americans write about sex and it's so explicit, but Chinese writing about sex and love is clouds and sun and flowers and nature and doesn't go into that explicit, and therefore is much more kind of powerful and evocative. And I'm hearing that in your work. Do you feel like that's a Chinese influence?
I think definitely. I think there's the idea of we tend to be so explicit in our society that, you know, it's Emily Dickinson who says, tell all the truth, but tell it slant. And I've always loved that. So I think for love poems, it can sometimes be more evocative and bring in a little more mystery, to use nature, to use suggestion, to have innuendo. So obviously there's, you know, the white flecks on her lips, on her eyelids. There are little details that are sensuous, but to try and make that part of a larger evocative piece.
Do you have another one?
I have a last poem.
Okay, great.
Apache Plume. Climbing out of an arroyo, I reach my hand into a small cactus and see the taro plant in the backyard unfurl a new leaf. A great horned owl perched on a ledge twitches its ears when we approach along the bottom of a ravine. I spot a hummingbird at the hollyhock, pear blossoms swirling on gravel near the gate. When you light a candle, the flickering shadow on the wall has the shape of an eagle feather. In the morning, when you do a yoga stretch, I feel the rhythm with which you sway, fingertip to fingertip, mouth to mouth, the shifting course of the Powaki River, white Apache plume blossoming to silvery puff. And as an astronomer catches light echoes from a nova, when I pull spines out of my palm, I know this instant moment, which is ours.
Arthur Z, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
And happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
I'm very happy now to welcome Carol Moldau. She is a poet. She's the author of 6 books of poetry and 1 novella. Her most recent book is Beauty Refracted. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you, Mary Charlotte.
So continuing with love poems mm-hmm. on Valentine's Day, would you like to read us some poems?
Yes, I would. I thought I would read chronologically, starting from the beginning of my relationship with my husband, because
who's also been on this show.
Yes, Arthur Z. And so this poem, the first one I'm reading, is called Wing Victory, and it's in my new and selected poems, So Late, So Soon. And I wrote this shortly after we got together, and so it's really about new love, or new love is part of it. Winged Victory. The motel, with its pay-per-view, is more scenic than the scenic drive, and more exotic, with you putting your forehead to mine to check for fever, prescribing cola, and charting our road, first with one finger, then your whole hand. The next day, it's tempting to touch the cavern walls, but we don't, knowing the oils we secrete indelibly mar and stain. Those draperies and columns, thrones and soda straws, I'd like to see the winged victory among them, not to compare and choose, but to be doubly bowled over. The winged victory and what's left of the Parthenon. But then, when they turned out the lights down there, 800 feet down, and it was absolutely unlit, pitch black, and for a moment they had us hushed, until someone, a crying child, broke the silence, and everyone began making noise. Wasn't that hair of a second in total quiet and darkness, though fleeting, one of the best moments yet? That, and the amphitheater at dusk, watching the cave's long exhalation of bats, and then the first stars. The world has so many ways to woo us, so many unexpected vistas, and miraculously, so much of it, your face at rest, eyeglasses off, near at hand.
It's so interesting to me that when we reflect on love that we've had, it's so associated with external places and events.
Yes, uh-huh. Places ground memories for us, I think.
Yeah.
So, but that poem was really written almost in the moment that it reflects back on.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was probably the first road trip we took together. And I was, you know, still very astonished at his companion, you know, his presence, his companionship, the
right.
kind of miracle of love. So.
So do you have another one?
Well, these next two are part of a long sequence called The Lightning Field. And the long sequence is not mostly a love poem, but again, this is a trip we took together within the first couple of years of our relationship. And so we're at the Lightning Field, you know, in the central New Mexico, the Walter de la Mare.
Right.
And we were there for a weekend. And so this is just reflecting again on the relationship, which is still quite new. At the center of the world, a seismic hole cut out of a jade disc inscribed with signs delicate as a sandpiper's tracks at low tide. A wrought iron bed in a bare room, a Star of Zion patchwork quilt, your hands, my hips, falling asleep still joined, every trap sprung free. Smegma at the umbilicus, and bitter ululations for the dead. Love's untranslatable glossolalia, welling up in my throat, tonguing my ear. Is it a faulty O-ring causes leakage between worlds, the mystic's watery eye, the desert altar's perennially trickling spring? No amount of celestial calculations can explain that bolt from the blue, that pure engine of divine kindness that brought us face to face. At the center of the world, two molted eagle feathers, one that stands in a bud vase filled with salt, one held up by a screw eye. Looking around the room as caravans of clouds, slow wagon trains, lumber across the window's quartered planes, I want to rouse you out of your light sleep, let you demonstrate, as the clouds drift, how thoroughly you penetrate my world. I do think love is a miracle, and I think and centers is the center of the world, and so that's part of what
he's
getting at there.
And I am struck in that poem just by the sound of the words.
Oh, Well, thank you. Sound is always paramount to me.
Yeah.
In writing, it's how I find my way.
Yeah.
So, and this is reflecting, this next section is reflecting back to when we first got together. Remember the row of Lux Perpetua candles lining your bedroom's brick-propped plywood shelf, each votive wrapped in waxy red-striped paper stamped with a virgin's upturned suffering face? And how, hidden behind the left-hand speaker, you had a box, no, a carton of condoms? Looking knee to knee at Vermeer's lacemaker, you showed me how you saw in the loose strands that overflow the velvet sewing box an image of the imagination's bounty. I said that I saw thread, a pair of hands, a girl's head bent down in taxing concentration, her own hand-worked collar framing her face. I remember you walking backwards into your room, drawing me with you, toward you, by both hands, the bundle of 50 yarrow stalks I'd brought, still splayed out on the front room's floor, one stalk still set apart to stand for the infinite, beginningless beginning and endless end, according to the Xeroxed instruction sheet. Not then, not yet, not that first night, but later, now, I see how liminal and charged we were in the laced and spiky candlelight, bending to meet the mattress on the floor, to meet like changing lines in a full embrace.
What book are you reading from?
So this is So Late, So Soon, which is New and Selected Poems.
Okay.
Which came out, 2010, I think. So then...
Do you have another one?
Yes, I thought I'd read two shorter poems from Beauty Refracted.
That's the new one.
That's the new one. So this is Sunday Afternoons. Sundays, nobody emails. Sunlight turns the curtains puce. We pull the chaise from the wall to face the horseshoe fire and say only what we mean. I see eyes in the grains of a ceiling beam, ghost-like bodies wafting in the saw cut. Oiled, my feet climb, then slip from your thighs. And this last one is Innocence. Your number was 120. The lottery got to 90. I would have gone to Canada, you said, candlelight pocking the smooth alabaster of your chest. Outside the window, a whiplashing of leaves. My relief, even so many years beyond, is sharp, visceral, laced with a stubborn will. Hail is all I want to know of shrapnel, camisoles of camouflage. Angling two fingers up and down the speed bumps of your ribs, like a skier taking moguls, I try not to imagine you young, as perishable and unmarked then as our nephews now.
Very nice. Carol Mulda, thank you for being with us and happy Valentine's Day.
Well, thank you, Mary Charlotte, and happy Valentine's Day. It's a pleasure.
You're listening to the Radio Cafe, and it's our Valentine's Day poetry show. Next up, we're going to hear the poetry of Israel Aros, a terrific local poet and artist. We'll be back with that in just a half a minute.
Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation strengthens education in northern New Mexico so that learners of all ages can reach their full potential. Offering grants that fund public education and community projects, building resilient children, families, and communities through early childhood programs, providing K-12 wraparound services for students and teachers with Inquiry Science as the flagship initiative, investing in students' dreams through scholarships, and creating a solid foundation for learning and systemic change through partnership and advocacy. For program information or to give, visit lanlfoundation.org.
I'm so happy now to welcome Israel Aros. He is a poet, artist, teacher, social activist, and much more. Thank you for joining us on Valentine's Day.
Thank you for having me.
So we were talking about reading some love poems, although they may not be strictly what might come to mind for some people when you think love poem.
Yes, definitely the stuff that I'm going to read. One of them was really sarcastic, and the other one's really talking about, like, the times we're in and really reflecting on our own love and our own history around protesting and also historical context of when we've all moved forward together. But I'm also just really right now thinking a lot about Facebook and social media as really beautiful tools and also as really toxic spaces. And how do we move inside and outside that? And also how, you know, we get together every Wednesday at 5:30 as Youth Works. And people make art, people do poetry, people come and sit down. It's intersectional space, and now we're doing stuff on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But I think that's my own love poem to these times we're in.
Very,
you know, we have a monthly open mic, and it's, again, inviting people to have the difficult conversations with each other, but it's, you can't have them across social media and other platforms. You can, but I think you lose out a lot when you take away the humanness, right?
Right.
The fact that you can't hear tone, you can't hear body language, you can't see body language, you can't see where people are really coming from when you're reading somebody's so-called point of view. And we're so built on dismantling other people's arguments. Or as I like to say, what I learned from UC Berkeley is argue the crap out of arguing.
Yeah, and there's such a difference between writing an article, which you spend a lot of time doing and contemplating and editing and rethinking and making it as clear as you can, and writing a Facebook post, which you dash off in 5 minutes or 30 seconds, and people read it with the same level of criticism.
Right, right. And then becomes your soundbite of a soundbite of a soundbite, and people's reaction to a partial context and not the whole context. And then they forget who the other human being is on the other side.
And that they're a human being at all.
Yeah.
Let's hear the poem.
Cool. Facebook. I thought these were real things on Facebook. A friend, heart-shaped boxes, clicks, likes, a collection of sage chocolate on my wall, a video poem, a kiss, a tag, a poke, another poke, another tag, a poem slipping into the corner of your computer RAM, another note singing into your wasted computer eyes. My screen goes blank with you. You! You, the one that never reads any of this. Because you're my friend, Keno. Didn't I meet you here by fate, by destiny? Didn't we interact the most I've ever interacted with anybody? Through this interface, through this faceless wall, through our metaphysical chat? Didn't we form our bond in the universe? Isn't this why these things were made? So we could be real friends? Oh. I really can't meet you for coffee. I have to meet up with Emiliana Zapata's long-lost cousin tonight. I have a Facebook date with him around noonish to midnightish or so. We're gonna plot a totally revamped evolutionary tortilla y frijoles marketing campaign to save the barrio. And we'll run for president at the local cultural Cafe Con Leche Center. It's going to be the model for the next 7 generations to follow. I'll post it on your wall later. But I got to go now. I love you. Poke.
Yes, indeed. It reminds one of the reality that love and not love are so not just about romantic love. There's so many kinds of love and dissolution thereof.
Yeah. I feel like they're all love poems. And yet at the same time, thinking back to some of my professors who are like, love poems are the hardest to write. Political poems are the hardest to write. And then I feel like that's all I'm ever writing, you know.
Do you have another one you want to read?
Yeah. This is from a chapbook that I'm working on called This America. This America, Part 10. This America is black blood, white blood, brown blood, yellow blood, all blood, drawn against the concrete. All the protest songs before Dylan and after Dylan, all the freedom songs of American black bodies being hung and breathing memory into slavery. These wars are our wars, trapped in our DNA, white DNA of white bodies along the picket lines, alongside Cesar Chavez and MLK, black bodies and indigenous bodies hosed down and attack dogs, burying the memory, burying the bodies, burying the proof that something at the back of the bus needed changing, that something inside history books needed changing. This America doesn't want you to recall white bodies, black bodies, red bodies, yellow bodies being put on the line for our children's 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 children. They want this DNA to go away inside this hybridity of slavery. This America is black blood, white blood, brown blood, red blood, yellow blood, all blood. This America wants to take away all your mestizo names, all your mixed blood, all your lineage not set in stone of all your ancestors buried underneath railroad tracks, underneath civil rights movements, underneath a petition sign, underneath queer America named, underneath concentration camp survivors, underneath family detention centers and Japanese internment camps. This America wants you to forget all the layers of blood that have been spilt for you in all directions.
It really seems like your poetry is meant to be read aloud.
Yeah.
Do you get a chance to perform?
Yeah. You know, we have the, like I was telling you, the open mics, and we invite everybody to engage. Because definitely, even right now, I'm like, oh, I got to pull it back. You know, because I'm used to like getting real, like especially with that poem. When I first wrote it, I wrote it on Facebook. But they're like little spirits, you know, each poem, each being. And when I first read it, it took over. And it was like so loud. And I was so shaky. And the truth of, right, the love that I'm trying to speak to in that piece really took over, you know, about like, hey, and what we were talking about earlier too, like, we're on the same boat. Don't forget which boat we're all in, of what love that we're driving towards, you know, in these times.
If people want to come to open mics or get involved and maybe hang out with other writers and artists, tell us about those nights.
So every Wednesday at Youth Works for Now at 5:30, we get together. Sometimes it's one person, sometimes there's 40 people in the space. So, but they can always reach us on Facebook through Alas de Agua Art Collective and find out about the open mics. We were actually going to have one today on Valentine's, but we're going to move it along to like towards the end of the month, because Tribes is going to actually let us use that space on a regular basis. So, but we migrate all around Santa Fe purposely. Like, we don't stay in one place. So it's good to reach out for us on Facebook and see where we're at. And we're doing mural stuff. But it's really about engaging outside of, you know, outside of Facebook. I feel like everybody's just engaging with each other there. Oh, I can't see you. Like the first poem that I was talking about. I don't have time. And then you find people there, right? We're reacting to each other because maybe they are busy, but we see their stupid Facebook thing saying they're active, sitting somewhere. And right. maybe their phone is lying there on social media and they're not there. But it just feels like such a toxic reality. There's something really beautiful because, like I said, I can put it all out there now, right? Really easily, and go, hey, we're over here now. Hey, on Wednesdays we're here. Tuesdays we're over here. You know,
Well, I will link to that site that you just mentioned at radiocafe.org, and if people want to follow up, they can. Israel Adros, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very happy now to welcome Miriam Sagan. She is a Santa Fe poet. She's a prolific author of 30 books, and she's here to read us some love poems. Welcome, Miriam.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So what have you been up to?
I have been doing all kinds of text installation. I've been working with my daughter, Isabel. We did an installation in the rail yard.
Like an art installation with poems on it?
Exactly. That was crowdsourced. We took 30 people through a process of Japanese-style marbling and linked verse writing. And we did an installation in Japan in Chorus Studio inside of a grain silo. That was poetry video and hanging pieces. And so I'm a little bit off the page. Also the haiku pathway at Santa Fe Community College.
What's that?
It's beautiful. It's 40 poets and 40 poems. Christy Hengst, the potter, kind of created these sort of like mushrooms or pieces of earth that rise. And each one has a haiku on it. And they're out in the central courtyard, a little bit easy to overlook. I think people walk by them and think, is that a mushroom or something like that? But they've been out there for well over a year, and they're beautiful. So I'm working a lot with the community to put poetry in unusual places.
What kind of reactions are you getting from the public?
I didn't know it was here. What is that? Then sometimes people steal things.
Oh, no.
Yes. Well, it's tempting, right? I think it's really fun and important to see where you live through the lens of the arts and through the lens of language, and to bring it alive. And so that's really what my focus is right now.
And so these poems are all very much Santa Fe based.
Yes, they're very site specific. I mean, the ones in Japan were about Japan, but they come out of the experience of being somewhere. And some of the work is geocached, so that lets people find it.
What does that mean?
Geocaching is this sort of game that people played for maybe 20 years where you find coordinates and you go there, and sometimes people bury things or hide things. And it's not that usual to geocache an artistic project, but there's the haiku signs on the west side on Catherine and on Cortez, and those are geocached, which means that if you're a nerdy geocacher in Albuquerque, you might come up and find yourself outside of my house reading a haiku sign and then trying to find the next one, and people in the house go, oh, there's geocachers out there. Better draw the blinds. It's really a way of creating audience.
There was a game some years ago that was super popular, whose name I can't remember.
I think it was off of Pokemon.
Yeah.
And it's extremely similar.
Okay.
The idea is that something is out there on a virtual level or an imaginary level, and then you find the real thing.
How do people, if there's geocachers listening to this show right now and they want to like do that, how do they start?
There's a website, and there's a coordinator who, if your thing is too, you know, funky or too messed up, they'll take you off. I mean, you have to have your actual coordinates down. People just look it up and they'll come to a new one. It's a way of being in the landscape that's actually, strangely enough, not that different from land art. Or even from petroglyphs, or from Stonehenge, from the idea of marking the landscape. This is just completely, you know, geocaching is sort of a subterranean community. It's just grassroots. There's nobody doing anything official. But when I think about that impulse to put a mark on the landscape, I do think it has some ancient precedent.
Very interesting. Well, let's hear some poems.
The first piece I'm going to read is from a long suite of poems called Llama Mountain that was written at Harry K.K. Foundation a few summers ago, and that was at an arts residency at the base of Llama. My husband shows me Scorpius with its fiery, stinging tail, rising by the moon beneath Jupiter and the summer triangle and the Dipper. Across the field, the campers chorus hallelujah, and two kids run off like mad into the darkness. If it weren't for you, I tell him, I wouldn't know the names of the stars. If it weren't for me, you wouldn't know the story of the shepherd and the weaving princess stars, separated by the Milky Way for all but one night a year. For us to meet, you just have to take 522 North, and I'll be home by Sunday. But if we weren't apart, I wouldn't know. Llama Mountain. And then these next two poems are from really a sort of an anthology done by Rene Gregorio, Joan Logie, and myself called Love and Death from Tres Chicas Greatest Hits. It's got a skeletons and a tantric embrace on the cover. It scares me every time I open it, even though it's my own book. When We Were Young. When we were young, we were meant for each other. We were stupid and went off hitchhiking on other hearts. Now that my hair is gray, I tell myself I could barely live without you. For who else wants to make love like this, in a yellow room, off an overgrown courtyard, in a peeling bathhouse, at the little motel, in a hot springs town, at the edge of the Chihuahuan Desert? This love I use daily. This love I use daily like salt, like soap. The more I use it, the less there is, dissolved. The paradox, I don't miss it, but find it everywhere, viejo. Your smile as you sleep, the blue door jamb, I find it in how I don't live by the sea, but hear it in your left ear, how I've lived beneath these mountains for such a long time.
You are from New Jersey, but you've lived in New Mexico for a very long time, most of your life, right?
Well, I had an amazing experience. Yeah, I came here when I was 30, and I was out in the street with my neighbor, who was born on the block, and he introduced me to somebody, and he said, "This is my neighbor Miriam, and she's lived here her whole life." And then he and I started to laugh, because we both knew that I had been 30 when I had moved into that house, and I was, you know, I was very touched that he kind of felt I was of the neighborhood, and also I had to say it was, you know, kind of my whole life worth living, or my life as an adult. Yeah.
I ask you that because it's just so interesting for me to be hearing how people experience love through poetry, and yours is really like locally place-based.
Yes. I mean, I don't know, Mary Charlotte. I think I cared about people until I was about 50. And then I really became obsessed with where I was. I mean, I always loved that I was in New Mexico. It was exciting, but something deepened, or my attachment to place became very, very strong. Many years into writing.
Very interesting. Is love poetry a big part of what you write?
I think it is, inevitably. I mean, you know, because I was a kid, right, when I started writing, and, you know, what am I writing about? I love you, you're torturing me. You know, I'm overwhelmed by you. Oh, no! You know, it just goes on and on and on. I mean, and it's the great tradition, you know, in almost every language, and certainly in English and in the Greek. And so the torment of love, and that's just perfect when there's torment of love. And then when my first husband, Robert, died, then there's the poetry of elegy and loss and, you know, moving on. And then it's a little bit personal, but I just feel that the beloved begins to represent all beloveds. I mean, or a spiritual quality of the other. And if you have a beloved, treat that beloved right, because they're really a repository for, you know, the divine and for people in general.
On that note, Miriam Sagan, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm very happy now to welcome Malena Merling. She is a poet who lives part-time in Santa Fe. She's also a professor at the University of North Carolina, and she's here to join us for Valentine's Day Poems. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
When I called you first or wrote to you about this, you were telling me that love poems aren't really the main kind of set of themes that you write about.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, I don't think of myself as someone who writes love poems per se.
Right.
But I think, as you mentioned earlier, in a sense, every poem is a love poem.
Yeah.
Perhaps in a similar sense that every poem is a political poem. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, let's read some poems and tell us a little bit about, or maybe just start reading.
Yeah, I have a poem here. It's called The Effects. And I wrote it after reading a poem by the Argentinian writer Borges. And he has a poem called The Causes. And I thought, okay, I'll write The Effects.
Interesting.
And here it is. The effects. Dawn slowly washing every face. To be awake, but not to need anything. The heart simply deciphering the air with its folds. The neural net of the new leaves sifting the wind. Everything that is imbued by being. The ghosts are on edge when the mirrors are tilted. The ancient coin of the moon high above every cash register. The invisible sand falling through the invisible hourglass of the present. The butterfly and Changzu that dreamt it, and vice versa. The apple complete before it is eaten. The deep red weight of it in the hand. How to dissolve this wandering labyrinth like a lozenge. Along Woodhaven Boulevard, you drink from the tulips' red and yellow and red goblets of light. Behind a wrought iron fence, a row of irises hovering like purple contortionists. You walk through two infinities and three suns. There are shadows of scarecrows on the earth that rise at noon and vanish into the wilderness of their own hearts. Below the steps to the beach, you find stones like cat's eyes. The flying whipped cream of the waves. Children running in arcs and circles on the sand. And the seagulls floating in the air above them. History is not only in the past. The ocean does not have an address. To reach it, you have to go there yourself. All this was made perfectly clear so we could meet.
That was the poem that you were telling me people have read at their weddings?
Yes, I was surprised, but yes, this is a poem that some friends and some former students, yeah, have told me that they read this at their wedding.
It's so interesting, the kind of gap between your own intention or feeling when writing a poem and then what happens to it when it gets out there.
Completely, yes. It's completely out of your hands. Yeah, exactly. That's interesting.
Do you have another one you want to read?
Sure, I do. This is a poem set in New York City, where I lived for many years, or nearby anyway. It's called The Empowerment. Today in Washington Square Park, among the drug dealers and the dog owners, the new mothers and fathers sit with their babies and with the students and the pigeons. They're all made up of the same atoms that once were part of the stars. A man, his feet swollen in slippers, too small for him, limped up to me. His face knife-scarred and burned from the sun, and told me he loved me. Then immediately turned to my friend, walking two steps behind, and said the same thing to him, with even more affection.
Based on a true story?
Yes, absolutely based on a true story. So, yeah.
Very interesting. I love that here on our Valentine's Day show, we're reminded that there's so many different kinds of love besides romantic love and so many ways of using the word love.
Yes, yes. At that moment, of course, that felt, it felt authentic.
So yeah.
It was very moving.
There's something about New York City where I haven't lived, but I've spent a little bit of time over the course of my life that is weirdly conducive to strange, random, meaningful events on the street.
Absolutely, yes. There's so much that occurs at any given, you know, 15 minutes. It was an incredible place to actually live and write because you don't know. There's just so much humanity,
yeah.
So many stories, so much happening all the time. It's a really interesting place.
Now, when I first approached you about being on this show reading love poems, I think you asked me, poems written by me or by other people? And I was like, oh, okay, both, I guess. You have a poem by somebody else that you also wanted to bring to us.
Sure. I have a poem. The first love poem I thought of when you wrote to me was this poem by the Israeli poet Yehuda Amichai. It's called Inside the Apple. You visit me inside the apple. Together we can hear the knife paring around and around us, carefully, so the peel won't tear. You speak to me. I trust your voice, because it has lumps of hard pain in it, the way real honey has lumps of wax from the honeycomb. I touch your lips with my fingers. That too is a prophetic gesture. And your lips are red, the way a burnt field is black. It's all true. You visit me inside the apple, and you'll stay with me inside the apple until the knife finishes its work.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that... It's a good one.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, definitely check out the poems of Malena Merling.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Malena, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.